recently lost my best friend, lost my sister.
A Métis woman is strangled at her front door in the spring of 2002.
It was a tough one right from the get-go.
And there's a single suspect.
And I said, why is this man still walking free?
He was just a con man and a manipulator.
I'm David Ridgen, and this is The Next Call, the case of Terry Dauphiny. Available now on the CBC Listen app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey there, I'm Rosemary Barton.
And I'm Elamine Abdul Mahmoud.
And this is Party Lines.
And well, we are down a governor general, Rosie. Julie Payette resigned last week, and the search is on to pick her successor. It's got a lot of people wondering, what should the new GG actually bring to the table? Or what does this whole story say about the Prime Minister's judgment?
We only had the one Governor General, so we didn't actually have one to lose. As we wait for another one, the Prime Minister has been dropping lots of hints about that in the next few days we will see further travel restrictions. So why now? Is there a concern that travel is bringing in new cases? Is it about the variant? Lots to talk about there.
So much to get into. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Again this week, the federal government has been strongly, strongly hinting at additional measures around travel, restrictions around travel, I should say. We first started hearing word that this might happen last week. And as we record this on Wednesday, we still don't have an announcement per se, but we have the Prime Minister saying it's coming and various ministers weighing in on what is and is not on the table. It comes sort of at a curious time because we are obviously at the height of the second wave as we try and clamp down in large parts of the country to get it under control. It comes as, we continue to have very strict measures around travel in place. You can only return into the country if you're a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident. You now have to get a test, a PCR test, 3 days, 72 hours before getting on a return flight from what should have been your essential travel, but as we know, may not really be essential travel. And you also have to self-quarantine for 14 days upon return. Apparently, Elamine, that is not enough. Apparently, there have to be further measures to dissuade people from traveling.
Right. I mean, the news of the variants is kind of dominating, right? Sure. And I take that seriously. There is the variant that originated in the UK. There's the variant that originated in South Africa. There's the variant that originated in Brazil. But right now, travel is not accounting for a great big heap of COVID transmissions.
Yeah.
It's mostly those community transmissions. That's not to say that like travel couldn't become a problem, but certainly right now, as we're looking at it and the numbers that are being provided for us, it's a pretty low number when it comes to where new COVID cases are coming from. So in addition to it being useful on a policy front, it's useful on an optics front to look like you are taking a stance. You know, premiers who want to look tough, who say, well, we put that federal government in its place and we told them we don't want travelers. And it's tough talk. And it's maybe tough talk at a time where it's honestly useful to them because the whole nation is kind of in this holding pattern, right? Like the vaccine supply is going to slow down a bit. Why don't we look at what are the things we can do?
If you look at the numbers from the Government of Canada website on January 25th. Does that make sense? Yeah. The people that have brought back the number of cases that have come from travel outside Canada is 1.4%. So that's obviously not a huge amount. Now, we know that, as you said, the variants have been proven to be, spread faster. And once they're in an area, a community, we've seen this with a long-term care home in Ontario this week, it spreads like wildfire and becomes impossible to control. So maybe the variant is the only explanation for why it's happening now. Let me play some of the Prime Minister from Tuesday, though, explaining, hinting, I guess, at what's to come.
We already have some of the strongest measures in place, which is why the the rate of importation of viruses is extraordinarily low. The vast majority of all of our cases in Canada come from community transmission. But obviously, even one case is too many on importation, and we are looking at even further restrictions on travel, which we are looking at very carefully to ensure that they're the right ones, that they're effective, and that they keep Canadians safe.
That's the Prime Minister on Tuesday talking to reporters. I did want to just mention an interview that our friends at The House, who also produce this podcast, did with this epidemiologist in Ontario, Dr. Peter Uni, who told the CBC's Chris Hall during that interview that the emergence of the variant strain is, quote, the single most scary thing I've seen as an epidemiologist so since the beginning of the pandemic. So, I mean, maybe that's a reason enough for wanting to crack down on spread or seeing further cases of the variant. Let me throw out a couple of the things that we think are on the table or we know are on the table for the federal government. Making people quarantine in hotels when they return instead of going home to the comfort of their home. So staying in a hotel that has been designated by the federal government and then having to pay the costs of that hotel for 2 weeks. There's talk even of invoking the Emergencies Act if needed, which would restrict all travel. There's talk of making provincial bubbles. So it wouldn't just be the Atlantic provinces, but you could not travel outside of your home province, something the Prime Minister has told people not to do anyway. So these are all things mm-hmm. that could happen, and including rapid testing when you get back, too. So you've not only done the test before you get on the plane, you do one when you get off the plane. Those are all possibilities for things mm-hmm. to further control travel.
Our colleague Aaron Weary had a great tweet yesterday. He tweeted, "Is there a particular reason why the Canadian COVID discussion is so focused on travel?" And I think it's a great Aaron Weary question because it's got this tone that underscores it, this like, okay, why are we looking at this? Is this really the thing that we should be hyper-focused on? Because it has been so far the story every day this week, and there are questions as to whether it should be, because there are other things to tend to as well. Like just this week, the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives released this report, and their report found that provinces are sitting on millions and millions of dollars in unspent COVID federal pandemic spending. That's money that the federal government sent to provinces to say, here, you're going to need this, spend it on helping Canadians actually figure out how to weather the storm. And just to run through some of the numbers of that report, 6 out of 10 provinces haven't spent the money that's available to them. The province that has left the most on the table is Alberta. They've left $336 million on the table. In Saskatchewan, the provincial government there has left unspent $18 million that was earmarked for restarting daycare safely. And in Ontario, like, the story has repeatedly been, why won't Premier Doug Ford roll out some kind of paid sick leave to supplement the federal program that's already in place, because a lot of people have deemed that program insufficient. Like, The Star ran an editorial about this week that mirrored the editorial they ran about it in November, that mirrored what experts have been saying for, I think, like 6 months at this point. Paid sick leave is a really powerful tool in stopping the spread, because essential workers, they can't give up their jobs and they don't have an option not to show up to work. And for the sake of numbers on that front, like 42% of working Canadians right now don't have access to paid sick leave. And if we go to low-wage and frontline workers, that number is 10%. So the provinces have a lot to answer for, which is why it's easy to imagine that right now they want to talk about literally anything else. Let's talk about travel. Let's talk about whatever. Whatever the topic is, let's just not talk about what we're not doing.
The other thing that's interesting is when Doug Ford on Tuesday went to Pearson to call on the federal government to implement rapid testing upon arrival, because Toronto, of course, the biggest airport in the country, what he has not called for and has not implemented in this province is rapid testing at long-term care homes, for instance, where the vast majority of people are dying in this province. He has not implemented rapid testing in congregate work settings, in warehouses, in places where it would make sense to try and prevent the spread of COVID. So obviously, we're not saying further restrictions are good or further restrictions are bad. We're asking the question, you know, why are they happening now? And I would say that no one in government today, anyway, or to date, has given us a clear explanation as to why they are needed now. Is it the variant? Is it concern that there will be increased travel during spring break? Is it that people aren't listening to the public health restrictions? We know that's the case for some people. We don't know. That explanation hasn't been offered. What's clear is that the federal government and many provincial governments feel that they need another layer of protection at a time when we are struggling to try and get more vaccine and get more people vaccinated.
Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I think it's probably right to go back to July 2017. It was a beautiful summer day, probably. I don't know. I don't remember. But it was the day that Justin Trudeau announced that Julie Payette would be the next Governor General. And there was a lot of excitement. Like, she's 20 years younger than her predecessor. She's accomplished. She's been to space. Like, she was, I think it's fair to say, they're exactly the right kind of symbol for the Trudeau government, because it's a government that has been so far pretty big on symbolism. And at the time, they were talking a lot about their love of science. I remember, like, Trudeau talking about solving equations, or do you remember that incident where Trudeau explained what quantum computing was?
I know.
Yeah.
Blew my head apart. I didn't know what was happening that day.
Yeah. Well, this is it. Like, so the appointment of Julie Payette fits exactly within the image of a prime minister who gets up and, unaided by anything, just, like, explains what quantum computing is. and we arrive at this point now where, 6 months after an internal workplace review into allegations of abuse by Payette, allegations of horrid workplace harassment, a report has arrived. As we record this, we don't know yet what's in that report, but we know that it was bad enough that the Governor General has resigned. And, like, Rosie, how did we get here?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We started out, I should say, when Madame Payette was appointed, Julie Payette was appointed, there was, yes, all those things that you said. This woman speaks a bunch of languages. She can sing classical music in choir. I mean, she's, you know, super accomplished. There was also, almost immediately, I would say within a week, questions about whether she was the right person for the job. But they were none of them based on her behavior inside workplaces. We got some tips towards the summer that our friend and colleague Ashley Burke then started to work away at. And there came to a point where Ashley was sort of inundated, frankly, with sources calling her, sometimes crying, desperate for some accountability, really because they couldn't think of what else to do. What has emerged, again, as you say, we're recording this Wednesday, we may get a redacted version of the report this week, but what Ashley's also reported is not only that the workplace was toxic, it's also now the news that there were incidents of physical contact between Payette and employees. We don't have a lot of detail around what that means, but certainly you could hear that and immediately understand why it was no longer possible for Payette to stay in this job. I think there are questions, though, about not only how she got the job, the vetting that was done, why the government chose her, and then who they're going to choose next and what lessons they've learned from this really serious situation, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, here's a maxim that gets repeated a lot, I think, in politics, and I think you said it on the show, is that the worst scandals are the easiest ones to understand. And in this one, it's really easy to understand. It's really easy to understand, or at least easy to explain for the opposition parties, where they can point to the Liberal Party and say the vetting that was done of Julie Payette was insufficient, because had it been more thorough, it would have just revealed a lot of different problems. So it begins to raise this question of, okay, yes, it's a story about Payette, but to what extent does it end up affecting Trudeau and how his government and his judgment are seen?
Yeah, and that's sort of been the ongoing criticism of the prime minister and his government throughout his time as prime minister, whether it be trips to the Aga Khan's private island for a holiday, whether it be choosing to wear costumes while in India, whether it be attaching yourself to the We charity group who's paid your mother and brother in order to create a program for students. I mean, these are all things that speak to judgment. So they're very, very serious. What is problematic here, I think, is that it's not that hard to find someone who could be governor general. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I mean, I can think of like 10 people right now. You know, the function of a governor general is important to our parliamentary democracy, certainly because they give royal assent to legislation. They take the advice or not of the prime minister around dissolving parliament. They could call on other parties to form government. These are all critical functions of the governor general. But it's not like you're doing that all the time, right? Most of the time, you are handing out awards to people. You are trying to connect with Canadians. You choose a topic that matters to you, and you go around and talk about it. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. I think for Payette, obviously, it was science. But it could be cartoon characters. Whatever you want to talk about, you go around and you talk about it. And you try and identify with Canadians, connect with them that way. That is sort of like the bare minimum of what you have to do. And the bare minimum requirement is that you are a decent person who is polite to their staff. So it seems strange that we have ended up here. And you know, again, to Ashley's credit, she found out about previous places of employment where Payette had similar complaints. So it's not like this would have been rocket science, frankly, to hear about some of this past behavior, which is now in a report that we are waiting to see.
I think the first time that I heard about these allegations, or just like stories about maybe how well suited Payette is for the job, it was in a National Post story way back in 2018. I think it was from Marie Daniel Smith and Brian Platt. I remember clicking on the story and like kind of scrolling and just discovering that it's like 5,000 words long. I'm like, I don't understand. How could there be this much? Just example after example of how difficult it has been, and just in her first year on the job, for Payette to sort of stick to convention in a job that is entirely about convention. I mean, really, it is one of the, I don't want to say it's an easy job, but it's not a complicated job. Like, it's a symbolic role where you bring comfort to people and you do the parts of the job that are largely symbolic. I think that is not a big ask. And so the fact that we ended up here continues to puzzle. And like, I also don't want to like distract from the seriousness of the allegations, because I'm sure there have been plenty of governor generals who have maybe phoned it in on the job. And like, that is fine. This is not that. This is sort of, the allegations here are much, much worse.
Yeah. So it sort of leaves us with the question, so who does the next governor general, or what does the next governor general have to represent? Because we're not getting rid of this position. It would require an agreement of parliament and all provincial legislatures. We are not opening the constitution, I don't think, anytime soon to re-examine whether we want a governor general. What the Trudeau government, though, needs to do is signal what that role means to them. And it would be important this time for them to signal that it is not about celebrity, that it is not about someone's personal brand, that it is someone who is steadfast, committed to the role, and maybe someone who, frankly, is just a little boring. That sound there, it's not the sound of you traveling and enjoying cocktails on the beach, because it's never going to happen again. I'm joking. Mm-mm. It's just not going to happen anytime soon. Anytime soon. It's also, though, the sound of last call, the saddest sound of all. Last week, we did ask you, you know, this basic question. We wanted to know, how are you doing? How are you coping with things during this second wave?
We heard from a lot of people on this one, sure. And I was really excited to hear from them.
Me
people
too.
Were grateful to just hear this talked about. They just wanted to talk about mental health. So we're just so grateful for the many people who wrote in to keep that conversation going. One person wrote, I'm holding up by making lists of things to look forward to each week, usually bubble tea, video games, TV, and long phone calls. I love that. Another person said, as somebody with chronic illness, I finally feel normal. Staying home and not doing much no longer feels like I'm lazy or letting people down. I'm actually able to participate in more things.
Oh, that's such an interesting thing. That's such an interesting comment. Okay. Another person wrote, some days it feels like my social life only exists inside my phone, like it was never real to begin with. I hear that. Every time I see the words new normal, my serotonin depletes, thinking this might be forever. As this goes on, I don't miss travel anymore or the big ticket items. I miss the small things like meeting someone new, shaking a hand, tipping a drag queen. I won't ever take this for granted ever again. I never realized how much these small interactions greatly affected my mental well-being.
Facts. Absolutely true. 100%. Last week, I also mentioned how my three-year-old daughter often asks, when the virus is done, can we something? She just keeps saying this phrase, when the virus is done. And the listener also shared what their seven-year-old says. They say, I just want coronavirus to be done, or I wish coronavirus never happened, or I'm making a list of things I want to do when coronavirus is over. And you know what? Same on all fronts.
Me too, seven-year-old. I can relate. Yeah. I'm going to go to Italy. That's on the list. Like, it's not the first thing. Yeah, okay. all right, this week we want to know, in light of our conversation, who would you like to see as the next governor general? You can tweet us a name, why don't you? I'm at Rosie Barton.
And I'm at Elamine88. Throw in the hashtag party lines. Let us know who you think it should be. Should it be Paul Gross? Should it be Katie Lang? I'd like to know.
Katie Lang? I don't think she lives here anymore, but, you know. Well,
bring her back.
Okay, great. Get this conversation started. That's it for Party Lines this week from CBC News and CBC Podcast. I'm Rosemary Barton, Chief Political Correspondent for CBC News.
And I'm Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud. I'm Chief Katie Lang Correspondent and Culture Writer for BuzzFeed News.
Well, why not Justin Bieber then? Okay, see you back here next week. Bye.
Bye.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.